Okay, continuing, Herman, about the Harvard Visiting Committee experience.
We'd meet once a year. We would assemble, and it was a group of both academic and industrial people who were regarded as suitable for the purpose by Harvard. And they would give us some statistics on the department and talk about the character of their work. And we would react. We were supposed to say everything was fine and hunky-dory, but they're pretty smug up there, as you well know. And they didn't take adverse comment too kindly. But I remember I got on one theme in which I think I had little effect. At the time I was active on the committee, Harvard had what was probably very clearly the New York Yankees of chemistry faculties. A superb group, very, very hard to find anything anywhere near comparable. And I knew these fellas, and I knew how old they were, and I kept telling them, now look, you got to do yourself some real recruiting. And a couple of my colleagues, like Bill Slichter at Bell Labs, who were on there with me, said the same thing. And it was very hard to get these fellas, to 8 or 9 or whatever it was, them, to realize they were mortal and would be retiring.
So, seem almost immortal.
Yeah, yeah. They were so damn good. And so intolerant of some very fine people that went through there and got thrown out. They made a number of distinguished mistakes. Now, of course, the world is difficult because people don't just automatically jump when somebody says, go to Harvard. There are too many other choices and too many good environments.
Yes, that is true, I guess. Well, one topic I have personal interest in, and let's put it this way, thinking about plant safety and disasters, these are certainly a growing concern.
Yeah.
I know you were at least knew about and were involved in some significant deaths at DuPont.
Well, the DuPont the basic DuPont attitude towards safety, I found always excellent. The one we had inculcated into us at the laboratory, particularly at Jackson Lab, which was more dangerous than central research because of the kinds of materials they fiddled with, was that you do not take calculated risks. You don't take risks. You fix them up so they're not risks. The other attitude that I found singularly good was that safety was a line organizational responsibility and that the individual laboratory and plant manager was responsible. In details such as the way a laboratory is, the way a plant is, whether things are clean, the general spirit was pretty good, although individual performance varied very greatly from plant to plant. The situation that I thought was most interesting was the one that occurred in the 60s at Louisville. Do you want to talk about that?
I'd like to. I
know it very well. This brought out a point with regard to safety that we had in our what you might call our safety equation, but the constant next to it wasn't great enough. What it amounts to is not the safety of individual operations, like how you brush your teeth, but process safety. We didn't factor in properly some of the elements of process safety. The Louisville 1965 incident, in which I think 14 people were killed, points this out. Our process for making chloroprene originally was known to be dangerous, and we took steps to handle this. We knew that acetylene was explosive, and so in the old process, we dimerized acetylene to monovinyl acetylene, separated the monovinyl acetylene from divinyl acetylene behind barricades, stone walls. It was a fort. And the Chambers Works was built that way, and the Louisville plant was built that way. The compression of acetylene was done at very small stages in Nash pumps, which are basically water pumps, where acetylene is pretty safe. In the 50s, with the need to make more and more neoprene, the business was exploding. Not literally, it was just growing like the Dickens. We got interested in more economical processes and made the first step, what you might call over the edge of the cliff. We switched from these reciprocal Nash pumps, which were safe, to rotary pumps, which we call blowers, roots. They were roots, centrifugal blowers. And this took the pressure up substantially. And as my friend Carter said, when this particular process was developed on the plant, there's going to be trouble. Carter was very conscious of process safety, having grown up with all the little explosions they'd had with acetylene and its handling.
They did have explosions at Chambers Works?
Oh, yeah, they had lots of explosions, lots of little explosions. But after the beginning, they knew what to do about them. They learned what to do about them, and they treated them safely. We went to these roots blowers, and that process was put in at Montague, when we opened up the new Montague Works, and it was put in at Maydown over in Ireland, and also put in Japan, when we opened up the Japanese plant. Out of all this, we had developed a core of knowledge that said that we had to be very, very careful handling acetylene, and monovinyl acetylene. But once we had them and ran the monovinyl acetylene into the plant to make chloroprene, we were pretty safe. So these extreme provisions came up to the point where you shot monovinyl acetylene into a chloroprene plant. We thought from our studies of explosivity, which had been pretty careful, that acetylene was the dangerous actor, that monovinyl acetylene could be exploded with an explosive squib, but that it would not be possible to set monovinyl acetylene off under the conditions in our plant. Mm-hmm. You couldn't develop enough energy anywhere. There wasn't enough of a situation where there'd be enough energy to set off the monovinyl acetylene. It was explosive in the vapor phase, but that didn't give you enough just raw energy to set things off or damage the equipment. And we were unsuccessful in setting off explosions of monovinyl acetylene in the liquid phase. Okay? Mm-hmm. Pardon me for all this detail, but
that's important.
We thought once we had monovinyl acetylene as liquid, we were safe, and we knew chloroprene was pretty safe. These are dangerous chemicals, but we knew how to handle them. You know, they like handling HCl or liquid ammonia. We had them, so we knew them. During the startup and operation of these plants in Montague and Maydown, we had two explosions which killed people. Those were traced back to acetylene explosions, we thought. And we took some provisions to correct what we thought was the trouble. It turned out, as you'll later learn, that we didn't understand those explosions. The neoprene business kept growing, and the plant's technical group developed a process that used, instead of the Roots blowers, which operated at a pressure, I forget the pressures now, but let's say 50 to 100 pounds, to improve productivity and the rate of reaction, particularly in the chloroprene process where the monovinyl acetylene was brought into contact with hydrogen chloride in the presence of a catalyst. They suggested we switch from the Roots blowers to rotary Swedish screw compressors, which now rotate instead of 100 RPM, say, we're up an order of magnitude to 3,000 RPM. Mm. And my friend Carter didn't like that process. This is when the plant's technical section was not under us. But in 1958, we got responsibility for the plant's technical section. Bell McCoy straightened out that situation. Holbrook liked conflict. He liked the plant's technical section independent from the research division. He liked to stir things up. Bell McCoy liked order. And he didn't like waste, so we got the plant's technical section. We got the job of finishing off that process. So by then, that process had gained so much momentum because it looked so good and was so economical and would save us so much money that we finished off the work, and we actually thought that after going through a very exceptionally careful review of the hazard instigated by my friend Carter, who was singularly conscious of this, we decided that the process was okay. And I'm now talking about the process for taking monovinyl acetylene and making chloroprene. We ran appropriate explosions with squibs, and we analyzed the equipment, and it looked all right, and we put in a plant with Alice Chalmers' American versions of these Swedish screw compressors. And the chloroprene process that we put in now was this one little plant with a big screw compressor was capable of making something like 180 million pounds of chloroprene. I mean, it was a dream, and it worked like a charm. We got higher yields. We could run at lower conversions and get less DVA. We had very high process efficiency, and it was beautiful. All our problems on making chloroprene seemed to have disappeared. One day, there was a little signal down at the plant where the there was a sign of some trouble with the compressor. seem to be not running quite so fast and laboring a bit. But the plant management, the manufacturing division, chose to keep working because they thought that on the run they could straighten that out. And I don't know the exact details in here, but anyway.
Do they have the compressors and so on estimated? So
there's a very sophisticated compressor, mm-hmm. very sophisticated instruments and seals and all that kind of stuff. Very sophisticated.
And these were monitored from the central control room?
The I don't remember the detail, but there was some signs of a little trouble, and they sent out some people to look at the plant. There was no sign that, you know, it wasn't red lights flashing or anything like that. It wasn't a stop situation, just symptoms. And baby blew, and it really blew. It just blew up that whole plant, blew out the lines. The explosion propagated all throughout the whole plant that manufactured MVA. It went backwards and killed 12 people initially, and I think there were two more had died. It was so bad that one fellow I knew quite well, they didn't find him for a day. Finally they got him, and when they found him, he'd been blown so that he was wrapped around a pipe, just like lagging. It was about 2 inches thick. A terrible explosion. Well, I got the job of running a crew to find out what had really happened. And used Art Myers, who's a very good engineer, full of good questions, to run the group down at Louisville, and got Bob Schultz, who was a good engineer, who was up at Montague, into Wilmington, and appointed him as a supervisor of process safety. This was the first one the company had. Hmm. And the job that we gave Schultz was to ensure the safety of our processes, starting with this one, so that this kind of thing didn't happen again. And the job we gave Myers was to find out what the hell had happened. To make a long story shorter, and we also started some new explosivity tests. We found out that what had happened was that polymer, monovinyl acetylene polymer, had built up in the very complex seals in the screw compressor. And the seal is fixed up with all kinds of convolutions and little passages, extremely complex and sophisticated. Polymer had built up in the seals and pushed the seals against the face of the rotor. And this is why the compressor was laboring a bit. The velocity was going down. Running around at 3,000 RPM, slowing down to 2,000 or thereabouts, the compressor rotor working against the seal face built up a hell of a lot of heat. And that heat was the ignition source. That's the first thing we had to find, was the ignition source. And the explosion had propagated in the vapor phase of MVA through the lines. That in itself would have done no serious damage. It would have blown a line here and there. But most of the lines were built to, in fact, they were all built to withstand a vapor MVA explosion. The explosion, without doing any particular damage, blew a seal here and there, propagated to the big condenser. Now, the big condenser really was a big, it's a big still with a top hat, and you run the synthesis of chloroprene at a relatively modest conversion to avoid adding 2 moles of HCl to 1 of monovinyl acetylene, and thus synthesizing things you don't want. And in the big still, you separate chloroprene from unreacted monovinyl acetylene, which then goes back into the compressor. In the top hat of the big still, which I forget its size now, but it's like 10 feet across, big top hat, is that in the top part of the still was a seething mixture of monovinyl acetylene vapor and monovinyl acetylene liquid droplets. In that situation, what we learned is that although monovinyl acetylene vapor does not liberate enough energy to set off monovinyl acetylene liquid when the liquid's at the bottom and the vapor's at the top, in the situation where the monovinyl acetylene liquid is dispersed as a mist, little droplets in the vapor, it can be set off. And when it's set off, we simulated this later, found out how to do it. When it's set off, the monovinyl acetylene liquid has in it about 6/10 of the energy of TNT. So we just blew the ass out of that still. And that gave us a new explosion, which propagated down the liquid lines and blew out everything. And that's what killed all the people. Our experiments attempting to set off liquid monovinyl acetylene from the vapor, the accuracy of them was vindicated by the fact that the explosion propagated right down the line to the big storage tank where we stored liquid monovinyl acetylene for reaction. We stored it down around 0°C. I forget the, maybe it's minus 10, but it's cold. And the explosion propagated down to the tank, blew the vapor in the big tank, but did not set off the liquid. Now that was a hell of an experiment, because I forget the amount of monovinyl acetylene that was in that tank, but it was something like 50,000 gallons. That would have really done something to that end of Louisville if that baby had gone off. We know the explosion got that far because the tank dimensions had changed very, very slightly. You could see the results of the explosion. Well, when we found out what had caused the explosion, we then, meanwhile, while this was going on, we figured we had to dilute the stream so that this sort of thing wouldn't happen. And I made the suggestion that proved to take care of it. That was to dilute it with butane, because the idea here was to have have in there a harmless molecule that would dilute the monovinyl acetylene, so it would be much harder to set off. And obviously, in a complex process, you want something that has physical constants as close to monovinyl acetylene as possible so that it will go around the plant with the monovinyl acetylene. So it's not at all profound. I just suggested we use butane because it has practically the same boiling point. So we ran some experiments with butane, found that with about 20-25 mole percent of butane, you could not set off the vapor except with extreme energy, and it was impossible to set off the liquid with it. So as quickly as possible in our other plants, we put butane in Japan and in Maydam, and never had any trouble. But we really went over those plants with a fine-tooth comb looking for any spots where there might be a chance of having pure monovinyl acetylene and vapor plus mist. So we made the process safe. But of course, having had that experience, and even with the process sanitized with the butane, we redoubled our efforts on the butadiene route, which was then a bit more expensive due to the cost of acetylene, and got our lovely new butadiene process.
Mm-hmm. But the butadiene process economically advantageous, or just
a simple process? Well, we had a nomograph that basically related the cost of chloroprene from butadiene or from acetylene based on the relative cost of acetylene. We knew the crossover point. And at that time, we had a contract with National Carbide, I guess it was, that where the acetylene was, we had a price on acetylene was something like 8 cents, whereas butadiene at that time was around 7 or 8. And at the same price, the acetylene moved better. But it turned out that National Carbide wasn't really able to maintain that price. They had to increase it, and they did. They just said they had to. It was sort of a force majeure kind of situation. And as the price of acetylene went up, the butadiene, by the time we had the process worked out, it was sound to go to butadiene, you know, as this process went on. And then we developed a butadiene to chloroprene synthesis that used our catalyst for the dehydrochlorination, and that increased the yield by 10% over the old just direct use of caustic. And so we came out like gangbusters.
Good.
Got enough?
Would you like to talk about mocha?
I can talk about mocha, sure.
You wrote a paper on that.
Yeah. That was interesting. We manufactured polyether urethanes, and the polyether urethanes were cured with an amine, a methylene bis orthochloranilin. That's what the mocha comes from formaldehyde and orthochloranilin. And that gave, with the liquid polyether urethane, some extraordinarily good properties in hard urethanes for gears and industrial tires and things like that. In fact, it got such good properties out of the polyether urethanes that we hurt Bayer, who was marketing polyester urethanes. Beyer then started to leak out rumors to the effect that Mocha was carcinogenic. Okay?
Well,